the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Have you got game? Got game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a show by gamers for gamers. How do you feel about winning a gold medal in video game play at the Olympics? Some people are trying to make it happen. Our reviews take a turn to the dark side with Darksiders 2, and the most famous brothers in gaming are back with a look at the new Super Mario Bros. 2. And we dive into the Autobot Decepticon War with an in-depth look at Transformers: The Fall of Cybertron.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, back in our assigned chairs for another week. Momin Qureshi here, Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb around the table. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Check the Got Game blog at Sportsnet590.ca. Simulcast on Sportsnet Television, only in my mind. But that's okay. No? Nothing? Fine. A couple of things to talk about right off the bat. A couple of things to talk about right off the bat. The Madden demo for Madden 13 is now out on the PS3 and the Xbox 360, so you can go download it and get your fix before you get your real fix. And I know not that many people listening to our show really care about NHL, just everybody. So you should know that the demo for NHL 13, not that far away, August 21st. A good friend of the show, Sean Ramjag Singh, the producer of the game, tweeting it and getting a lot of response. People are very excited for that, as well they should be. We chatted out at E3, and the true performance skating is pretty spectacular.
I'm not totally sure what the release date is, but I mean, it can't be much more than a month away from now.
No, I think it's sometime in September.
At this point, yeah. No, I'm thinking early September. I don't have it right off the top of my head, but it has to be early September.
You know what the best thing about NHL 13 is? Can't be locked out and can't go on strike. So it's coming when it's supposed to come and when it's supposed to happen.
Take that, Gary Bettman.
Take that, Gary Bettman and everybody else. We can play virtually. The Olympics are all done. Long gone, I think, of the past now. By the time the show airs, it'll be a week done. How would you feel about playing video games as an Olympic sport? There is a group out there who want to make that happen. The people from torch4gaming.org became motivated to make sure the thumbsticks would be part of the Olympics. They started an online petition to convince the IOC of the merits of video games as an Olympic contest. Though no specific games were mentioned, so far they have 2,670 signatures from 81 countries by the time we started taping the show. I love video games. I really do. No.
Why
no,
not?
No.
I mean, it's a skill-based event like anything. Listen, they gave out 5 medals for shooting a handgun. Shooting a handgun.
Yeah, that's fine.
5 gold medals. 15 in total. If that's a sport, then why can't something like video games, where you do have to practice on and on and on and on and on to be really good at, why can't that be a sport either?
Because it's a game. Yeah. It's not a sport.
Guess what? They're called the Olympic Games. Game is already in the title.
That's true.
Really?
That's true.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm excited for when Olympic darts. And you know what else is a skill? Calligraphy. Olympic calligraphy would be exciting. It's just stupid. When people confuse sports with games, it drives me crazy. And there are sports in the Olympics now that I don't think should ever be in the Olympics. Like,
what
I don't even want to go into
ping pong have to be in the Olympics if video games can't be?
I agree.
No,
ping pong should not be in the Olympics.
The ping pong is high. The way they play this is not playing in your garage. The way they play it is highly athletic, man. Those guys are crazy.
Doesn't matter.
Those
it's still not a sport. It's
no,
it's a leisure.
Table tennis.
What about
angering the table tennis community?
I don't care.
All two of them out there.
Bring it on.
Come at us. We're
no, I think it's ridiculous.
Don't hate me, bro.
Look. Just because a sport like, or a sport in quotations, like shooting is in the Olympics, and much respect to all the people who are shooting and trap shooters that make it to the Olympics, very difficult. I don't have that skill.
I forget what it is, that clay shooting where they have the rifles, that highly skilled. And I'm not saying that shooting a pistol isn't highly skilled either. I'm just saying, though, that if this is a standard to which the games are being set at, there's no reason video games can't exceed that standard.
Look, I'll tell you this. Like I said, a sport like shooting is in there. That doesn't mean it should be in there. It's just in there.
Like that gymnastics with the ribbon that I hate.
Gymnastics.
Oh, God.
And remember, they took actual sports out. Like they took out women's softball. They took out men's baseball. So real sports are not in the Olympics anymore. I love video games. You know I love video games. I host this show every week. We do it every week. We've been doing it for years. But no, video games do not belong in the Olympics.
Okay, let me put out a theoretical question to each of you then.
Let's hear it.
Let's say you were reasonable people and not going off in strange tangents right now. If video games were in the Olympics, what game would be the sport?
Kinect Sports.
I was going to say, anything that had to do with the Kinect would be, in my mind, the only thing that would be logical or rational. I think anything that actually just involves sitting and using your thumbs is... would not be acceptable.
But, I mean, like Halo, StarCraft, they already have leagues that are run. It'd be very easy for those to sort of just come underneath the banner of the IOC because they're already built to have a competitive mountain. They built StarCraft to have an actual competitive environment in it, which makes it awesome.
But then only three countries would ever win medals. South Korea, China, and Japan would win every medal every year. That would be the end of it.
I would argue against the Kinect because I know the Olympics already have a hard enough time with their technology. Like that poor girl in the fencing and all sorts of other problems like that. So I would not think Kinect would probably be the best idea.
I think it would.
I think it would be the only thing in the spirit of the Olympics.
That's true.
I personally would like to have Minecraft.
Just so people can build?
Yeah, and you just have like subjective judges like giving like out nines, like the English judge would just be like, oh, jolly good chap, I love this building you built. I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. And
maybe they can build the Olympic venues through Minecraft.
I was going to say, when Sims Olympics comes out, Brian is going to be reviewing it. That'll be it.
Oh. I don't know. Like, I mean, that's a good question. Is if we put... I can't think of a game that I would put in that exists right now.
Trackmania. Trackmania 2 Canyon would be the game I pick.
I'd put Track and Field from the original NES with the pad on the ground. That's what I would want to put in there. That was like way pre-Kinect.
All of the dancing games, of
course. That's the right answer. All of the dancing games.
Rocksmith,
yeah. That was an awesome bass
solo. But then the U.S. would bring in Slash, and then we'd be screwed.
But
come on.
You can't tell me the professionals in the Olympics in a whole new way.
You can't tell me that would not be the most entertaining Olympic event of all time.
It would.
It would, like, swimming put to the side. Track and field, no one cares about Usain Bolt anymore. It'd all be about that sweet guitar solo that Slash would be in the middle of.
Like, think about who the representatives from each country. You'd send Slash from, like, the U.S. You could send... Oh, I don't know. There's so many people from Britain that you could send to be there. You could send so many great reps from each country. It would be amazing.
Well, who would we send? Gordon Lightfoot? Who would we send?
I don't know if Gordon Lightfoot shreds as much as he can play sweet acoustic ballads.
But it's more about accuracy, not about shredding.
In that case, maybe Ed Robinson.
Ed's not a bad choice.
You send Bryan Adams.
I was going to say Bryan Adams could throw in there. All right, this is crazy.
Actually, you guys put me on a topic. You're listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We were talking about the ridiculousness of
somebody, a group out there saying that they want to push for video games to be part of a future Olympics. They're putting out a petition to get the IOC to come around.
Sadly, only 2,670 people have signed that petition.
Before we even started this show, myself and former co-host Ken Rodney went out to the Fan Expo one year, and they had a video game portion. They had a Quake tournament. They had, I think it was maybe a StarCraft or a Warcraft tournament. And one of the other things they had was a Guitar Hero 2 competition. And the way those guys performed, I would totally want to see that on a bigger level. Guys were up there with their plastic Guitar Hero guitars doing, like, throwing it around their neck. One guy was playing behind his back. One guy was playing behind his legs. One guy was playing with his eyes closed. They were, like, performance artists. And I remember interviewing one guy. And I said, what's the craziest thing you've done? And he said, I actually had an engineer rig my guitar to shoot flames out of the end while I was playing. And he goes, and I was going to wear like a flame retardant glove and like light my hand on fire for my big solo. He goes, but then the commissioner of, I guess, the MLG or whatever was like, no, that's a fire hazard. You can't do that. I was like, really? He's not going to let you light your plastic guitar on fire and like burn your hand. I've like, suddenly gone from no to wanting to sign this petition now.
Yeah.
I'm still no. The
more points you get.
Well, maybe you could put it in the ceremonies.
That would be the last event in the right in the middle of the closing ceremonies. No, it would be horrible. I'm sorry. I'm still
it
against
might be our
it completely.
Only chance to ever get into the Olympics, though. So,
what are like as in the three of us?
Yes, as in the three of us.
Hold your horses. I'm still betting on archery myself.
All right, Katniss. You listen to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Just want to tell you quickly a game that Christine, you and I tried at the Konami booth, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
We did.
It was a hell of a fun game, actually.
Yeah, it was.
If you want to play a hack and slash game to the extreme, That's one to keep your eye on. It comes out on February 19th of 2013.
I kind of remember you guys telling me about this. Isn't this that game where everything is destructible?
Completely. Oh, yeah. And I love that when we were demoing it, the guy, as I had my turn, the guy who was demoing it with us just turned to me and goes, "Wow, you're really angry, because I just went to town on everything."
I remember the very first time that game was announced at E3. I forget which E3 it was. I think it was 10. Mm-hmm. But I remember sitting there watching some sort of press conference and them just showing off the game and showing how accurate the cutting system was. They were sitting there chopping a watermelon in slices.
Yeah.
It was kind of impressive how accurate that system was.
I think that was part of the early part of the training we were going through. And like at one point you can kick a sword out of your foot and like a blade comes out of your foot and you can chop somebody up. And I was like, this game is awesome.
It was pretty cool.
Unfortunately, February 13th, so it's still a few weeks away. But hey, the Madden demo and NHL.
Or months.
Also, last week we mentioned that Ubisoft was going to be at Fan Expo, which is coming up next weekend, as well as Microsoft's going to be there showing off Halo 4. Sony's going to be there showing off some stuff. We got an email from THQ saying, hey, we're going to be there too.
Yep.
They're showing off Darksiders 2, which Brian Calhoun will have a review of later on in this show, and WWE 13. You will be able to get your hands on both of those. They'll also be showing off Metro, Last Light, and South Park, The Stick of Truth, but those you will not be able to get your hands on. They'll just be showing a demo probably or a
but that South Park game, even if you can't get your hands on it, you have to see that.
Yeah.
You really do. It is impressive just how much work they put into making the game look like the television show and really look like the television show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we were talking to, I forget, some line producer, some random artist down there at E3, and it was just impressive how much work they had to go through in order to get this game to look like the show. I mean, they had to go above and beyond the call of their duty in order to do that. It was impressive.
The Microsoft press conference that we went to at E3 was very cool, but probably, like, and they had Joe Montana and Usher came out and performed a song, but Christine, no question. Matt Stone and Trey Parker come out, and me and you were like, what?
Didn't see it coming and was so excited.
And my favorite part of that whole thing was, number one, I asked a good friend of ours who works in Xbox PR about that, and they said they didn't know that they were coming, but apparently they asked them if they want them to write stuff for them. They said, no, we're just going to wing it. And so they just went up there, and they totally winged it. Of course, they were hilarious.
Of course.
And the other thing is that...
they were also the only people there who were able to wing it. Everyone else had a script.
Yeah, exactly. And well, obviously, they're writers for a living, so they can do it. And the other thing was that when they said, you know, in the game, Kyle has to go to Cartman's house and he has to walk there. And we didn't know where that was.
Yeah, how to figure it out.
One second you're at Kyle's house, and then you cut to a scene and you're at Cartman's house. And so we had to sit there and physically draw the map and be like, okay, Kyle lives here, and Cartman lives this far away, so he has to walk down the street and make this many turns to get to Cartman's house. And I was like, ooh, the world's coming alive. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's neat. It'll be exciting. I think it's... who doesn't love South Park? And just even seeing this game was exciting, and it kind of it brings that smile to your face. And I'm excited to hear what our listeners think.
This is the one that everyone should go see. I think it's the must see for Fan Expo,
especially because there was talk that it wasn't going to happen for a while there, and then suddenly, bam, it was there.
And the concept behind the game too, as you're the new kid.
In the
game, you play the new kid, and so you're not playing as Kyle, Cartman, Stan, or Kenny. You're just the new guy, and they turn to you and they need your help to save the world. And so it's very cool that they work you in as yourself, whoever you are playing.
I really hope there's a mini game where you get to play as Butters.
What about Token? I want Token in there too.
Mr. Hanky?
No.
Hey, everybody.
Anyhow. Let's just start naming South Park.
Christmas DLC. Holiday DLC with Mr. Hanky.
Yes. Yeah, you are a smart businessman. That's it for segment one. Coming up next, a game that I got to see at E3, did a bit of an interview, and if you're a fan of the Transformers... not those crappy Michael Bay movies, but the real thing. You're going to want to stick around. Also, reviews of the new Super Mario Bros. 2 and Darksiders 2 coming up later. That's all coming up on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Momin Qureshi, Christine Chubb, Brian Calhoun back around the table for the second section of this week's show. When we went to E3 in June, they were showing up a whole bunch of stuff. Some of the stuff that really caught my eye, this is one of them. Transformers, The Fall of Cybertron is the name of the game. And the reason it caught my eye is because it has nothing to do with those crappy Michael Bay movies, which I was very excited about. And that's...
that may be the best thing.
Yeah, I was really excited.
Have you heard what he's doing in the new Ninja Turtle movies? Apparently they're aliens.
That project's been shelved right now.
Of course it is. Good. Why are Ninja Turtles coming from space?
He's like, it'll work.
No, it won't.
And they weren't supposed to be mutants. Don't get me started on that. Damn you, Michael Bay. But if you want me to work on a movie of yours, I'll do it.
You're just a shell.
Just I am.
Shell
we
of
spoke
a man.
To Matt Teagers, who's the game director for Transformers: The Fall of Cybertron. And the first thing I asked him was, okay, so if this has nothing to do with the Michael Bay movies, help me set up where we are.
Yeah, we're not related to the movies in any way. So we are telling a story that takes place on Cybertron. If you don't know anything about Transformers, that's fine. Cybertron's their home planet before they ever came to Earth. This is where they come from. And in our story, there's no humans. It's all about their civil war and what's happening on their planet. And ultimately, they leave their home, and that's kind of where our game ends.
I personally am thrilled that it has nothing to do with the Michael Bay movies. That makes me very excited. As somebody who grew up with the Generation 1 of Transformers when I was
this
a very
game
little
was
kid.
Made for you, then.
Yeah, very much so, and I'm very excited because a lot of the original ones that I grew up with are there in their original iterations, which is very exciting.
Yeah, so we, you know, I love the G1 cartoons, and I think it's the primary spiritual touchstone we do with everything in the game. So we always looked at G1, and you know, as much as I love those cartoons, like there was some crazy stuff that happened back then, right? So we stayed true to the spirit of things that were created in G1. As a real simple example, Jazz is in the game. He's got a great voice that's very evocative of the G1 style. He's got a grappling hook, which is something you remember from G1. But it's modernized. It's done in a way that really makes a lot of sense for us. And so, like I said, it's our touchstone is the G1 stuff. So if you like that, you're going to love this game.
Excellent. Now, what's the storyline about? Obviously, we know it's the fall of Cybertron, so I'm assuming that it's got to do with sort of the last few moments of the planet's existence before everything goes and falls apart.
That's exactly right. You know, it's a big, gigantic transforming world, right? It's basically a big, giant supercomputer, and it's shutting down. It's shutting down, and they can't live there anymore. So there is a plot within the Decepticon campaign or camp to find a way to reboot Cybertron. And the Autobots don't necessarily agree with that plan and are seeking exile, voluntary exile, at the same time. So it's kind of it's a dark time on Cybertron.
Now, speaking of older generation Transformers, I saw a little bit of a teaser here that you guys revealed at here at E3, and it's got the biggest of them all in there, one of the biggest of them all, in Metroplex, which I was like, whoa!
Yeah, he is huge. You know, when we really wanted to embrace all the great things about the Transformers license, one of those is that there are scads of really interesting characters. At the same time, we wanted to do a lot of variety and epicness of scale. And Metroplex is just like, it was check, 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 check. Like, he just delivered on all of those things.
Very, very neat. Now, maybe walk me through some of the other characters that we're going to see throughout this game.
So, you know, that's the strength of this game is the characters. And when you take control of a character, you're really going to kind of get in their head, not just from a story point of view, but from a level design, gameplay, mechanics that we put together, you know, the whole package. So we've got Bumblebee and, you know, all the big names, right? Bumblebee and Starscream and Optimus and Megatron, all that whole crew. But then there's other guys other Transformers who fulfilled a really great gameplay need, like Grimlock, who I'm very excited about, or Bruticus, five Transformers combined together to make one that allowed us to do a very different gameplay style than anybody else.
Talking about Fall of Cybertron here on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, walk me through a bit of the gameplay. One of the things, obviously, with Transformers is that you like to transform. I understand
kind of the core of the property, transformation, right?
Appropriately named, So how about the transforming? I mean, are there limitations on when you can transform? How much does transforming itself figure into the gameplay?
You know, that's a good question. And everybody in the game can transform whenever they want to, always. And that's kind of a big part about what makes Transformers so fun. You can go into a space and you're going to make those quarter-second tactical decisions about how you're going to tackle it. Do you fly over top of them? Do you fly underneath? Do you stay in your robot form? Do you stay exclusively in your vehicle? All that stuff you can do whenever you want. Now, there is one notable exception to that, and that's Grimlock. He cannot transform whenever he wants to. The story that we play through with him is it's his origin story, and he's coming into his power. So his power, and what's great about this is you've been playing for a long time now at this point, and you really understand transformation. It's become innate in your thinking. And now we make you double think about it. You kill enemies, you build up rage, you can, once your meter's full, you can then fire off this Tyrannosaurus Rex form. But because it's so fundamental to the way you've been playing with transformation, it feels like a really neat, interesting gameplay challenge when you play as him. I'm really very proud of how that turned out.
How about the gameplay itself? We haven't really touched on what you do. I mean, I guess if you're a fan of Transformers, you know it's all about fighting and battling and shooting off stuff. But I mean, can you get into some specifics of some of the gameplay mechanics we're going to see in this?
Well, we're a third-person shooter at our heart. Third-person shooter with vehicles, obviously. And shooting experience is very important to what this is. So there's actually a variety of weapons. One of the great things we've done here is not only do you have the traditional sniper rifle, shotgun, assault rifle, you know, all the stuff that you're used to, but we also, because we're sci-fi, we could do things like a lightning gun and a Tron disc gun and a plasma cannon, things that you wouldn't be able to get in a lot of other games. And all of those you can buy and upgrade through this kind of Teletran store, so you can really get invested in what these weapons are and what they're doing for you. It's super cool.
As an original fan of the series, how do you feel this is going to be received? Because obviously the Michael Bay movie has got, if you're polite, mixed reviews. A lot of traditional fans weren't really a big fan of it. This seems to be going back to what fans used to like. How do you feel this game will be received by people?
Transformers is a really interesting brand because it in some ways is very polarizing, right? You have people who love the Bay films and people who hate them, and people who love Prime series and aren't interested. You know, I think as a group, though, they all love Transformers. And when you really look at what we're delivering in this game, as we were joking about it earlier, right? We said, oh, well, the core thing that's interesting is transformation. We put that in your hands. And I think that bridges all that stuff. You know, I think that core concept and how that feels and works is over and above any of the other pieces of, like, how you came into the Transformers brand. So I think if you're old school, this wave of nostalgia is just going to, tsunami is just going to crest over you, and you're going to have a blast with it, right? And if you're not, if you're, you know, a 17-year-old or 16-year-old, you've been introduced to the Bay universe, I don't think that's a bad thing either. I think you understand what transformation is and how that, and now you get to play that in a really well-executed way. I don't see any downside.
And when's it coming out?
We're coming out August 28th, so not that far away. I'm really excited for fans to get a hold of it. And we're coming out on 360, PS3, and the PC.
That's Matt Teeger, the game director of Transformers Fall of Cybertron. Got to take a quick look at it at E3. We did not get any hands-on time. We got to watch him play it. And I got to tell you, it looks like a pretty fun game. You can one of the cool things that he talked about in the interview is that you can transform at any time, so there's no restriction. So if you're inside a building, and you can fly around the building or drive around the building or whatever. So it looks pretty cool. So I'm excited that comes out on Tuesday. Sony making a bunch of announcements.
At Gamescom.
At Gamescom, yeah. First of all, PlayStation Vita getting PlayStation Plus service before the year's up.
Which is awesome. I mean, look at what that has done for at least the good name of the PlayStation 3 after years and years and years of just turmoil and trouble, being hacked, all sorts of things. They released a service, even though they're charging $5 a month, it really seems to have grabbed the heart and souls of the gamers who play in the PlayStation 3. So I can only imagine it'll do good things for the Vita.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's definitely good. I mean, especially if you already have it on your PS3, it'll help you if you have it on your PS Vita. Sony also announced a new cross-buying program, which means if you buy certain games on the PlayStation 3, you'll get the PS Vita version for free.
Yep.
And that's going to start with PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. I love this idea.
That's the perfect game to start with.
I hate this idea.
Too.
You hate it? Why?
Yeah, because if you're going to do something like this, okay, it's cool for people who already have a Vita.
Yeah.
But right now, the Vita's problem is that it needs cool, awesome experiences that you can only get on the Vita to push units.
Right.
This is not going to push units. This is going to be a situation where just people who already have a Vita will go, okay, this is kind of cool, not something I need, but something I will enjoy. It's not something that will sell systems, which will make developers want to make more cool experiences.
I assume we're about to say the same thing.
That's not entirely true, because sometimes word of mouth and seeing things and having people say, this is what I can do, is probably better than any marketing you can get. You know, word of mouth marketing is huge in the video game community.
I know, but I know you have a PlayStation 3 though, Christine.
And
let's say you really enjoyed PlayStation Battle Royale or All Stars, whatever that game's called.
Mm-hmm. All Stars Battle Royale.
Yeah PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale. Would you really pay a couple hundred dollars to get a Vita just to get a version that you could take on the go, which you would not be able to play online against other people because that functionality is not part of the system?
Would I personally? Probably not.
$200.
Because I have no interest in portable gaming. Like, I don't have any of the portable systems. I just like to game at my house.
But here's the thing. Would I do it based on one game? No. But if I bought 5 or 6 PlayStation games over a period of time and they all came with an extra version for the Vita, then I'd start thinking about it. Yeah, PlayStation's All-Star Battle Royale is not enough to convince me to buy a Vita. But if I buy 3 or 4 or 5 games and they all come with Vita versions with them, then I'd say, hey, maybe it's worthwhile for me to invest in a Vita because they're giving me this game that I love playing at home. Mm-hmm. And if I can pause it and then continue it on my Vita elsewhere, and they're just throwing it in when I buy the game anyway, what the hell? I think I think this is the kind of thing that actually can move units.
I don't know. I don't totally agree with you. It's cool, unique experiences that sell systems.
But you don't totally disagree with me either, though, which I like.
The tides are changing.
Yes. Also, they said that Sony will start a full-scale launch of PlayStation Mobile this fall, which...
Don't they mean... Like, I put on exactly what they said.
Right.
Don't they mean relaunch, though? Because they have had a mobile store ever since the Xperia Play came out last year, I think in April 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And you could grab it on that Sony PlayStation certified tablet they came out with. We also talked about that. So I guess they have to mean relaunch.
Yeah, I guess in a way it is relaunching because I don't think that's going terribly well for them.
No.
So they're relaunching. Also, Sony's launching mobile software development kit at the end of the year for a cost of $99. You can get a license to develop stuff for Sony. So if, as we've talked about many times, this is a quasi-hotbed for indie gaming development. So if you want to throw your hat in the ring, there you go. And
hey, look at what happened with the guy with Sound Shapes.
Yeah.
I mean, look how successful that became.
And they did it for Sony.
That's right.
Which is cool.
And speaking of Sound Shapes, also, we should mention that you can get these PlayStation Mobile games on tablets, like we mentioned, that are Sony certified, on phones, we mentioned, that were Sony certified,
right,
and also PlayStation Vita. So maybe the person who gets the development kit may make the next Sound Shape. It's possible.
Yeah, no, sure.
Just saying that the Vita system can play these mobile games.
If you don't know what Sound Shapes is, you can go and check our show from 2 weeks ago where we had the guys on.
Yeah, they, 2 weeks ago.
They're from Toronto. They made this game for the Vita. It came out last week. Definitely check it out because it's kind of a cool interview and it's a cool game.
We didn't review it, but a lot of people have reviewed it very kindly. It's getting very high scores.
Mm. It's different, which is kind of neat. So I like that. Also, with the dedicated launch of the PlayStation Mobile Place, they have said that PlayStation certified devices will not be available anymore. So I guess that means they want to put out their own stuff.
No, that's not what that says.
Oh, did I read that wrong?
Yes. It says when they launch the PlayStation Mobile Store or relaunch it, that PlayStation 1 Classics will not be available for PlayStation certified devices any longer, which you currently can get. I'm guessing that's some sort of licensing agreement that's probably, you know, come due. So it's probably easier for them to let slip than to renew it. Mm-hmm. So.
That is true. Next segment, Brian Calhoun, you're going to be talking about a game that people have been waiting a while for, got delayed a while. It's called Darksiders 2. You're going to review it, and I'm going to have a review of the new Super Mario Brothers 2. That's all coming up on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you gameplay?
You're back listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, around the table. I am Momin Qureshi. It's a show where we talk about video games each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Check the Got Game blog at Sportsnet590.ca. We've arrived at the time of the show when we do reviews. We're going to kick off with Brian Calhoun, who played Darksiders 2.
Yep.
It's a game that people love. Darksiders 1 got very favorable reviews. Darksiders 2 was in the works for quite a while, got pushed back at least once, maybe twice if my memory serves, but it's finally out and you've had some time with it, so let's hear about Darksiders 2.
It's one of those games where I really am of two minds. There's a game that I wanted,
right,
and that's the subjective part of my mind that's sitting there going and screaming at the development team going, why did you do this? And the objective part of my mind going, even though this isn't the game that I wanted, that doesn't make it bad. Now, I should say that Darksiders 2 tells the story of the writer Death, like we talked about last week.
Right.
His brother was the star of the first game, got into a little bit of trouble, just a tiny little bit, caused Armageddon to happen.
That's just a small problem.
They hate it when that happens.
And his brother, Death, is like the horseman Death, the apocalyptic horseman Death, is like, well, I know my brother. He's a stand-up guy. He wouldn't have done this. I'm going to go on a quest to prove that he's innocent. Mm. And that's pretty much what this game is. You're going from big hub world to hub world, trying to prove his innocence and mean a lot of really cool, really well done, really the voice acting is very well done, but also the character design is really done. So a lot of really, you know, complete and just great characters along the way. But like I said, it's not the game I wanted. The game I wanted was just give me the sequel to the first game. Mm. That's not what this is. This is something completely different. This is the game, like they said last week, that they wanted to make. Darksiders 1 was not the game they wanted to make. It's a game they could make. It's the game that they had the time and the money to make. I don't really want to make this seem like it is the fundamental part of this entire franchise, but the original Darksiders game was kind of like, people, when they were trying to explain it, they're kind of like, well, this is The Legend of Zelda, but like more mature. Because they did take a lot from The Legend of Zelda. They took a lot of those game mechanics, put them in their game, and made it work. Darksiders 2 is kind of a lot like The Prince of Persia. There really is a lot of running around. It's also kind of like God of War, where it's the same combat, this hack and slash combat you know from that franchise. It's also a lot like WoW, because there is a loot system and there is damage per second, little numbers flashing across the screen as you knock people around. So imagine if those three games came together, what would that be? That's Darksiders, if you can imagine in your head. It's also, just to be simple, it's a third-person action game. You're going from one area to the other, just hacking, slashing your way through tons of enemies, you know, trying, like I said, to get to the end and prove that your brother War for the first game is innocent. And even though it wasn't the game that I wanted it to be, I have to admit, though, it is a really well-done game. Like I said before, characters are awesome. Landscapes look beautiful. There are some problems with some textures. They don't look as high-res as they could. But still, just the design, the concept looks great. There's also like 30-plus hours of gameplay. So in a world where it's common to have a first-person shooter with a six-hour campaign, you're going to get at least 20 hours, probably more, of gameplay. Plus, they've added on things like the Crucible, which we talked about last week, which is kind of like this arena mode, which will give you more gameplay, stuff like that. It's not a perfect game, though. It's very glitchy.
Right.
A lot of glitches. There's also, like I said, these big, beautiful worlds, which you can ride through and like just take a look at these awesome, huge monsters and stuff like that, and also take on those awesome huge monsters, which is really cool. There are times you're just running through like this big open canyon, and then the canyon widens even more, and you know, like this huge plain, and then there's like this 7-8 story tall guy standing in front of you and like, okay, I'm taking you down, big boy. And then it's just this huge battle, and just the scale sometimes is just mind-boggling. So
that sounds pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it does.
That sounds very cool.
It's really cool, but the problem is that that's the exception, not the rule. It's a huge world, which is awesome, but those big bosses are in there. But
those moments are few and far
between.
There's
a lot of, like, if you remember the original Assassin's Creed game, you spend a lot of time riding from one place to the next. It's a lot like that. So, sadly, that's a huge problem. And also the loot systems in this game, which I've gone on record, I don't care about loot systems. Doesn't interest me at all. But to me, the idea of a loot system is just something that's like, oh, here's all this cool stuff I got. I can show it off to all the people I know. There's no way to show it off to anyone you know, because there's no multiplayer in the game. There's nothing in the game really to connect with other people. You can, like, send items to other players if you want, but there's no real way to, like, say, oh, hey, here's my guy. This is what he looks like. So to me, as someone who already doesn't like the system, I have to say, well, why is that there? Because the best loot systems are in multiplayer games like Borderlands, like World of Warcraft, where you can show off your cool guy. So if you can't show off your cool guy, well, why the heck do I have to waste all this time picking whatever the best sword is? Like, just let me go at the guy.
The game you're talking about is Darksiders 2. That's Brian Calhoun reviewing it on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, you said it was glitchy. Are you talking just like pixelation glitchy or like game-stopping kind of glitchy?
The glitches are numerous. It's hard to just say that there's one type of glitch.
Yeah.
The good news is, though, that they're not game-stopping glitches for the most part.
Good.
I did have to restart the game once or twice, but we're talking like once or twice for a long time.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Hours and hours and hours. The majority of it is just like textures are funky, and you know, sometimes you go and hit this one button to open the door and it's not working, and you got to take a step back and then go back forward again, and then it works. Stuff like that, things that won't destroy the game. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, you at some point you just go, okay, there's a lot of glitches in this game,
right?
So
it's more tedious than anything.
Yeah. But it doesn't destroy the game completely. Mm-hmm. It's just enough there that you just go, okay, so this is going to be a glitchy game. I'm just going to have to accept that and have the fun I can have with it.
As someone who played Skyrim, I totally understand that.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. And like I said before, this isn't the game I wanted. And the subjective part of my mind is just going, why the heck did this have to be the next game? You know, it's not the game I want. It's not the game I care about. But objectively, I have to sit there and go, okay, this is glitchy, but still, just the scope is impressive. The characters are just so well done. The story, it's a slow burn, but once you get going, there is some extremely cool things in it. And at the very beginning, you just get like this really good look at the back history of the Horsemen, and you just learn a little bit more about who they are and where they came from. So if you like the first game, there is enough in this game to get you going. And if you want, you know, a decently put together hack and slash, something like God of War, something a little like Prince of Persia, this has that gameplay in it. So if you're looking for that sort of gameplay, this is a good idea. Not the game I wanted, but still 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10, nice. Eh? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say that. Even though, like I said, subjectively, not the game I want, objectively, it has to be an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 from Brian Calhoun for Darksiders 2, now available at stores everywhere. I had a chance to play a game called, it's about this character named Mario, I don't know if you've heard of him. It's called the New Super Mario Brothers 2. And unlike the New Super Mario Brothers, this is not on the Wii, this one is on the 3DS. First thing, this game you'll be able to get either digitally through the 3DS shop, or you can go in the store and pick it up. I think it's cool that they're offering it both ways.
The future is now.
The future is now. This game starts, and in the first opening sequence, you see the princess waving goodbye to... she comes out of the castle and she's waving.
Let me guess.
I'm going to get there.
No, hang on.
No, wait. I want to tell the story. So she waves goodbye to Mario and Luigi, and they leave, and they say, bye, princess, and they leave. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be different. She's not going to get kidnapped. This is amazing. And so Mario and Luigi are walking, and then they walk about 12 paces, and then you see Bowser and all his kids and the princess. I'm like, oh, come on.
Called it.
Like, that's a bold prediction on your part. I thought for a second there I had a hope that they were going to go with a different storyline. But I was like, of course the princess gets kidnapped, and then Mario and Luigi have to go and find her.
The feminist movement takes another step back in the world of Mario.
You know, at some point you got to figure Mario's going to be like, enough. Seriously. Like, lady, I've been chasing after you for 30 years. Really, that's enough. So this game, it's laid out like most Mario games with the worlds, and you have to go through and fight different levels and stuff like that. This game, huge emphasis on coin collection. That's the big thing, is you have to collect coins. To give you a slight idea, by the time I was on World 4-1, I think, I had like 10,000 coins collected. So it's not difficult to collect coins in this game, but it's very much a big part of the objective. And they do it through... you have the regular stuff like the flower and the star and the raccoon tails back in this one. But there's also a gold flower, where if you get the gold flower, pretty much anything you shoot turns into coins. So like if there's like a huge section of the brick blocks, you shoot one fireball into it and you're gold, and it all turns into coins.
What do you spend these coins on once you collect them?
Nothing. I think it's I was legitimately trying to figure out what it is. It's just basically bragging purposes, I guess.
Why the focus on collecting so many coins?
Well, you know
what?
You know what's interesting is that and then there's other parts where you can grab. You know how they have the red circle that you grab, and then you can grab those 8 red coins, and it gives you a 1-up or a leaf or whatever. There's ones where you can do it with the gold coin, and everything, all the Koopas and all the Goombas turn gold, and then you have to jump on them, and they give you coin value. You know what the coins did? Is they made the 1-ups completely obsolete. Because you collect 10,000 coins, you've got like 60, 70 lives, you get a little mushroom 1-up and you're like, well, that was useless. Like, I don't know why I got that. What was the point?
Why couldn't this be coins?
Well, I know. Why couldn't this be a mushroom or a leaf or a flower or something that I need a little bit more than these millions of coins that I have now?
So you're saying this game is really just like an essay on North American consumerism?
I wasn't going to go that existential, but I guess so. It's still really fun, though. I mean, it's a really good Mario game. It's a bit of a twist. It's them trying to freshen up the story. Well, not the actual story, because as I said, it's the same story as before. But the gameplay. A big thing in this game is secrecy. There's a lot of, like, you're going through the map, and you see different worlds and different pipes and stuff, and you can't get to it. And you're like, how do I get there? I want to go there. How do I get there? So there's obviously a lot of secret ways that you can figure things out. As with Super Mario 3DS, which came out, the big star coins collecting is a big thing because they unlock certain things that you can get. So it costs you 5 coins to open up this, 10 coins to open up that. So you have to do that. And those are sometimes really hard to find. Some of them are really easy, but some of them are actually really difficult. And it tells you when you collect a coin, it says there's 3 spots. And if you get the one in the middle, that means you missed the first one earlier, you missed the last one or whatever. And so those are tough to find. I will say this. Levels are actually pretty challenging in this. And what's good is if you fail a level, I think it's maybe 3 or 4 or 5 times, the golden box comes up that has the golden leaf, which gives you the golden raccoon suit, which makes you impervious to anything except for falling off the edge. So that gives you basically your out to get to where you're going. I really enjoyed this game. I mean, it's a pretty much a standard Mario game with a bit of a twist, but that's exactly what I wanted. I'm giving this game a solid 8.5 out of 10 for the new Super Mario Brothers. Last week, we also mentioned that a listener on iTunes gave us a very positive shout-out. We couldn't remember what his or her name is, and we have found out that person goes by the handle of Fuzzhead23. So Fuzzhead23, we thank you for that lovely shout-out. If you feel inclined to go to iTunes, that's where you can find our show. And you can also give us a rating, whichever you please. We like positive ones.
Or you can also go to our blog at sportsnet590.ca, because stuff is going to be there that's never going to make it the show. Simply, we do not have enough time to get everything in the show. So we did an interview with the guys behind Papa When Yo, which is a wonderful game that I know everybody at this table loves. That will be up there. Christine, you're also going to put something up there as well.
Yeah, I'm going to have a review of Hybrid, which is coming to the Xbox Live Summer of Arcade. It's the latest game. So go check it out. It'll be, by the time you hear this, you'll be able to click there and see it.
It's all on the Got Game blog on sportsnet590.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. But that does it for now. For Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.